world is changing.
So keep up with Rob.
The Rob Snow Show returns on Rogers TV and City News. 101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
When I revealed my snowmobile, frill by frill by gully and hill, baby, it'll make you feel like an outdoor meal on a snowmobile. Listen to the sound of the belts go round when the winter carnival's here, and oh, what fun at the crack of the gun when the whole gang disappears. The race is on from the bush to the pond and back where the judges feel you've won their seal. For the snowmobile, you've won their seal. For the snowmobile.
Bruce McIntyre is here, Eganville leader. Time for Valley View. Good morning.
Good morning, Rob. On a fine Wednesday.
How are things this week?
Things are good. I find myself in the nation's capital.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I'm at Trish's little weekly soiree.
You're a city pied-à-terre.
I'm cleaning. My job is to clean.
Okay, that's good. Look, I'm so glad the paper's out, right? Paper's out on newsstands, the Eganville Leader. And I'm so glad you have three pages all with the Dateline Pickwaganagon about 14-month-old Lil Kev Virch. Tell us about this story, Bruce.
Well, it's amazing. First of all, Rob, congratulations. You said it correctly. Pickwaganagon.
Yes.
Last time we talked, yes. Trouble with that.
Thank you.
This is the good feel story of the year. The little Kev has it's a form of muscular dystrophy. It's a very rare. He's only 14 months old, and the medical name is SMA2, and it's the most severe you can get. And unfortunately, to recover from this, to deal with it is one thing. To live with it, but there is an opportunity when they're this young that they can reverse the course of the disease and get back to somewhat normal life. But it does come with a cost. The Ontario government doesn't cover it through a normal OHIP plan. So for the one-time, one-shot treatment is $2.8 million. And
yeah, $2.8 million. One-time drug.
Right. One-time drug.
But like a miracle drug, right?
It is. Yeah. Especially, this is a very rare drug. Rare disease. Maybe one in 10,000 children will get it. And what it causes is loss of the nerve cells called motor neurons and the spinal cord, attacks the muscles, causing weakness and strophy. So the earlier they're diagnosed, the better. So he was diagnosed very early. And his parents, Dana Pierce and Rody Virch, set out to do the fundraising. And, of course, they started up the GoFund page. And within a week or two, they had a call from the Johnson Foundation, and they said they would forward the money. The entire whatever's left to remain, the $2.8 million, is covered through the Jordan's Principle. And it's named after another little guy who had the disease as well. It's really worth your time, the listeners, if they want to understand the nature of the disease and how this Jordan's Principle has helped other individuals. They have a website, and you just Google Jordan's Principles. And Jordan Anderson, he was named after. He was a little guy, and it's in his memory, which it is. And Pickwaganagon, Rob, is a community of about 300, approximately, and they came together, which they always do. Chief Wendy Jocko rolled up her sleeves and got involved to help with the fundraising, the family, and on the reserve itself, there's a lot of traditional legacy families. And sometimes families, one family become the chief for about a couple of generations, and then another family will take over. And there's always a little undercurrent of tension and, a little bit, especially they have 11 dispensaries on the reserve now.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But they put all that aside and they came together to start doing the fundraising, which is fantastic. And so,
yeah. And I was wondering, my gosh, $2.8 million. And you got the sense that there was some momentum behind the fundraising, but what a surmountable sum of money to try and raise that. Plus all the money that it takes, there's travel and where are people going to stay and everything else. It would have been an incredible challenge for that family. So
yeah, little Kev is. As well, he's being treated at Shield to deal with this as well. And as you know, there's a pandemic going on, but Shield's been able to accommodate the parents to allow them to be with him while he's only 14 months old.
Yeah.
That's terrifying in there. So, but an incredible, incredible good news story. And I like 2021 so far. We're having good news stories. It's not overly cold. We could use some more snow. Rob, we may have to work.
Oh, really?
Snow.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And we're still doing our part again with the COVID. And we've had some, it's funny, Rob, you and I were talking about the first 6 months of the pandemic, 5-6 months, we were always hovering around 30, 31 was our total case number.
Total cases in all. Yeah.
Yeah. In all the county. And right now we had 4 local outbreaks declared last week and they're over. And right now we have 287 total cases since pandemic began. So from March through to early September, we were hovering around 30.
Yeah.
And since September to today, we have 287. So almost 10 times the amount, 9 times the amount. And again, a couple of those were the Mennonite community. Had about 35.
Yeah.
So there have been outbreaks. This time a little different. We had an outbreak at a staff member at St. Francis Memorial Hospital, another outbreak at the Pembroke Regional Hospital. And we were both of those, and as well, Marion Hill Long-Term Care Home. That's, you know, immediately your red flags go up on that. But they were able to isolate and remove the individual very quickly and whoever they came in contact with. And Dr. Cushman is of the opinion so far so good. And it appears that the problem has been eliminated. So we're very grateful for that. And again, it's people here, you know, the no one likes the lockdown that's going to be starting tonight at midnight.
Yeah.
I challenge your listeners to come to Renfrew County, but don't do that.
No,
but,
don't do that. Don't do that.
I'll get a Google map and you'll see the streets are deserted. There will not be people out. I mean, there's some rare odd cars, but no, you will not see many people out during the...
People are compliant.
They are. We're not cheap. Yeah. We're compliant.
So, okay.
So... And we had some good news.
But
well,
I do wonder if you have that kind of like... Like that kind of, you know, radical rebel viewpoint that is expressed by people like Randy Hillier, like that kind of like
Rob, who's been our MP?
Like that kind of like resistance movement, you know.
Who's been our MP the last 20 years, Rob?
The MP, Cheryl Gallant, is it not? Cheryl Gallant?
Enough said.
Right. I haven't heard anything from her in forever.
No, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I mean,
she's been there. She's the longest. She has gotten longest serving MPs in the conservative movement, and she's not even a deputy critic. Nothing. So, yeah, it's too bad.
But you know what, Bruce? Whatever. But when she runs, she wins. You know, she wins big.
Battleship to launch and rolls them over. They keep putting them up. They're like a bowling pin. She rolls them all over. So good for her. I mean, she wins. So congratulations. Good for her.
You know, one of the things I wonder about with Renfrew County is how Renfrew County could be impacted by this idea that hard hit hospitals, say an urban hospital in Ottawa, whatever, gets slammed. Are people going to be moved to the hospital in Armbrier or in Pembroke or in Renfrew?
I'm sure that's in the plans because it's happening in Toronto. I was reading that Toronto downtown hospitals are now being moved to Halton, Georgetown. You know, they're sending their patients up there.
And if that's the case, what's the capacity of the hospitals in Renfrew County to have an influx of patients from city hospitals?
I'm going to hazard a guess. It's a 100 beds, give or take.
Right.
Each hospital has about the smaller. Renfrew, I think, has 21 beds available. It's low. I know Barry's Bay has 21. Armbrier is probably a little bit more. I'm going to say 100 to 125 beds. That's just a rough guess, but I will find out for you next week, Rob, and give you an exact number.
Yeah, okay.
But there's probably have people in them already. So you're looking at probably setting up emergency shelters, and which Chief Mike Nolan was looking at with the cots. You were 500 cots to be ready on standby. So, you know. We're not going to go there because we're going to be fine. The Renfrew County will be fine, and Ottawa will reverse it like they did before, and they'll be fine as well.
So let's talk about a couple of other public officials, current and former, that are mentioned in the Eganville Leader this week. One is Renfrew County Warden Debbie Robinson. What's the news there?
Well, she is the – well, I was going to say Reeve. She was the Reeve. She is the mayor for Laurentian Valley, which is basically encircles Pembroke. And Eastern Ontario Wardens Caucus is made up of 13 counties, which represent all of Eastern Ontario, over 2 million people, not including the city of Ottawa.
Okay.
And they have done some amazing things. They've been a very strong force. When it comes time for the budget to come down, both provincial and federal,
yep.
they have an hour and a half consultation with the minister one-on-one. And it's very impressive. They brought in the broadband internet service. They were able to get funding out of the feds for that. Because before, anywhere you went, it was like, you got mail, AOL, that's the sound you had.
right, yeah.
They've done that.
Rural internet, isn't it great? Right.
Isn't it great? Yeah. They've lobbied successfully for Highway 17. Luckily, our MPP, Mr. Jakubowski, is his home riding, so we have a Highway 17 being extended. Economic development initiatives. So they are a very strong, powerful lobbying force. They have a counterpart, Western Ontario Wardens Caucus. Anyway, Debbie was acclaimed, so it'll be a one-year term. They usually serve two, and she is the chair. She sets the agenda, and what they're going to be tackling, of course, this year will be COVID and the fallout and economic development. That'll be their emphasis. They're still working on getting all of it.
But that's a big job for her. Eastern Ontario Wardens Caucus.
Yep, she's the
Debbie Robinson.
She's the mayor of her township. She's the warden of Renfrew County, and now she'll be the chair of 13 counties.
Very interesting. Wow, I should try and get her on the program. Okay, and former longtime MPP, one-time education minister, Sean Conway, is a recipient of the Order of Ontario. Tell us a little bit about that very quickly.
Rob, I'm going to plead ignorance. I didn't know we had an Order of Ontario. I didn't know that until found out.
Okay. Until it became a scandal because they were giving it to Mike Harris, right? So,
Sean Conway, some call him Silent Sean. He's not a big talker. He's not a loud person. But I'm telling you, Rob, he knows because cousin does the same thing. He knows everybody's name. He can go up and down the county, and if he's met them, he knows their name, and he is being recognized for the award. Just the community service he's done, just the contributions to the Ontario legislature and outside. He's been with a law firm since he left politics. And it's good for Sean to be recognized for that, just in his accomplishments. Because we, unfortunately, up here in the Renfrew County, haven't had too many people that have gone on to be successful politicians at a much higher level, a ministerial level. And luckily, his cousin, when Sean retired in 2002, 2003, a young fellow by the name of John Jakubowski thought he'd give a shot at it, and he ran and he won. And Sean and John are first cousins.
Oh, really? They're first cousins. They okay.
And ironically, his cousin John became elevated to a minister of transportation originally, and now he's minister of forestry, natural resources and forestry. So there's good genes in that bloodline. And Sean is...
Politics is the family business, I guess.
It is. He's helped Paul Martin write his book, Hell or High Water. He's 69 years old, still spry, and he still shares his time between his home of Barry's Bay and Toronto. He goes back and forth, has a cottage up there. Who doesn't have a cottage in Renfrew County? It's wild. So it's so good for him. And I'll have to do some reading up on the Order of Ontario because I got a plead ignorance. I didn't know we had one. And Mike Harris got one, so I didn't know that.
All right. Well, talk soon, Bruce. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. And tell your listeners, get up by an Eganville Leader. It's a great deal.
From the Eganville Leader with Valley View, that's Bruce McIntyre. We'll be back talking more about the stay-at-home orders coming into effect midnight tonight for Ontario. Curfew already in effect in the province of Quebec. We'll talk about the constitutional questions at play. Here on the Rob Snow Show, Rogers TV, and City News.
Firm.
Fair.
Fun.
The Rob Snow Show returns
on Rogers TV and City News, 101.1 FM
and 1310 AM.
Month-long curfew in Quebec. Don't leave the house after 8 o'clock. And a stay-at-home order coming into effect in Ontario, midnight tonight. What are the constitutional questions here? Christine Van Guyen is Director of Litigation, Canadian Constitution Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's a great pleasure. What concerns you about these measures, Christine?
So in our view, the Quebec curfew is unconstitutional. It's an infringement on your Section 7 right under the charter to, you know, for liberty, which includes the right to freely move around. It's not a justified infringement because it's not minimally impairing. There are a lot of other things that the government could do short of a curfew. But most of all, the curfews aren't rationally connected to the goal of reducing the spread of COVID. It's not like the virus is more transmissible at night. And we already know that everything is shut down. It also raises a lot of problems for example, homeless people. What has homelessness been literally criminalized in the province of Quebec? There certainly aren't enough shelter spaces to accommodate everyone, and the shelters are have COVID in them. And you know, the burden of the curfew, which does allow people to travel at night for essential jobs, you know, that burden will be disproportionately borne by people from minority communities who are more likely to work in shift work and are therefore more likely to be pulled over by police and subjected
so then you're
to
into issues.
So,
yeah, I'm sorry, Christine, because so then you're into issues of equality rights, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of rights.
Section 15 rights.
That's Section 15. And people who are returning home from other provinces en route, in transit, their Section 6 mobility rights are impaired. You know, there's a lot of rights that are being implicated by this curfew that does nothing to stop the spread of this virus. Okay. I mean, the province has said it's about sending a signal, and that there's no study that shows it stops spread.
Right. So Section 7, life, liberty, security of the person, liberty being the kind of key word there, liberty. Mm-hmm. Section 15, equality rights. Then you have, you know, the fundamental rights, peaceful assembly, freedom of association in Section 2C, 2D. So maybe, you know, those are in play as well, right?
Yeah, but a lot of rights.
Yeah. So then, but then you kind of have this. And I want you to explain this again, because I mentioned this with Ryan O'Connor, who shares many of the same concerns. He was on earlier in the week. You have Section 1 of the Charter, which basically says you have these rights until a judge says, well, actually, we can demonstrably justify that we need to infringe upon them. Section 1. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms guarantees the rights and freedoms set out in it, subject only to such reasonable limits prescribed by law as can be demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. So would you expect the government, whether it's the Legault government or the Ford government, to say, well, we think a curfew is a reasonable limit? And because we're in a global infectious disease pandemic, and we can demonstrate why it's justified.
Yes, they would make that argument.
Yeah.
But there's a legal test.
Okay.
A legal test for whether something is justified.
Okay.
The onus is on the government to prove that the limit on our right is rationally connected to an important goal. So there would need to be a rational connection between limiting our freedom to move about after 8 p.m. in Quebec and stopping transmission of a virus. And in my view, there is no such rational connection, because the government has itself said this is about sending a signal more than it is about stopping transmission. And if you can't connect the limit on our right to the goal you're trying to achieve, you can't justify imposing that limit.
Right.
There are other parts of the test that also have
so
to be
So it would have
caring.
To provide some evidence, right?
Yeah, they would have to provide evidence.
Yeah.
So in my view, that is not a justified limit. The curfew is not a justified limit. And I'm not saying, you know, there are no health measures the government could impose. I certainly think some of these limits on our rights could be justified.
Right.
In this instance, a curfew, not justified.
Okay. So that's one of the legal tests. Right. For Section 1. Is there another one, did you say?
So the first is that there needs to be a rational connection.
Yep.
The
rational.
The second is it needs to be minimally impairing on the
minimally
right.
Minimally impairing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that means that there can't be alternatives. So if there's an easier alternative to less restrictively achieve that goal, they need to use that alternative. And certainly the government has taken all kinds of measures that are piled on top of one another that are already, you know, helping to stop the spread. So I don't think adding a curfew is minimally impairing. And lastly, it has to be proportionate to the goal trying to be achieved. But I think in this case, the curfew only, you only have to, the government has to pass all three, not just one.
Not just one. Okay.
So I think they fail on rational connection and minimal impairment.
Okay. You, your organization said you're seeking people who have been fined in Quebec, right?
Yeah, that's right.
To challenge this.
That's right.
Have you had any takers on it?
I've had a number of people reach out to me, and I have some calls later scheduled this afternoon, both with people who have been ticketed and lawyers who are interested in working with us on the challenges.
Well, I think I think and welcome this coming before the courts. I think it's important to have clarity on many of these issues.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Christine Van Gyne, Director of Litigation, Canadian Constitution Foundation. Doris Greenspun is going to join us, Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. She's the CEO there, and she doesn't think the stay-at-home orders go nearly far enough. We'll speak with her, ask her why she believes that. This is The Rob Snow Show on Rogers TV and City News.
He's a pillar of community opinion.
The Rob Snow Show returns
on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM
and 1310 AM.
The stay-at-home order is to come into effect 12:01 AM. So midnight. 1 minute after midnight tomorrow morning. Doris Greenspun, is here. CEO, Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. Good morning.
Good morning, Rob. Thanks for having
us. Well, it's a great pleasure to have you back on our program. What did you think of the announcement from Premier Ford yesterday?
The same as I have thought since the beginning of the pandemic, too little, too late. And the train left the station and we're running after the train, which will crash. I'm interested today, Rob, is if together with his announcement about how he will really enforce the stay-at-home, he will also announce moratorium on evictions. He will also announce sick time for people that are on precarious employment so that they actually can stay at home when they're sick, because the premier is saying a lot of good words, but he needs to put the systems of support so people can actually comply and we can get hold of this virus, because I tell you, the health system is crashing as we speak. I do not even want to think, Rob, what it will be within not a month, but 2 weeks from now.
Okay. Yeah, I want to focus primarily on the situation with acute health care right now, given that's where most of your members are employed, I would suspect, Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. What are you hearing from the front lines of the health care system right now?
So, Rob, listen, they have been already a year at it, almost a year. So, remember, they have canceled vacations during the holidays. They have had not even enough vacations on the summer. They're now overwhelmed with the number of patients coming. They're exhausted as we speak. Many of them have had family members ill. Now kids are not in school, so they have the additional concern about their kids and going to work. But they keep going. Our is a tribe of committed health professionals, where those are nurses, doctors, respiratory therapists, all of them committed to the end degree, and we will continue to be there. But the premier needs to be there for them. And the only way he can be there for them, Rob, is to curb the virus.
Yes.
Not just nice words.
Yes.
But give the sick time to people that are vulnerable.
Okay.
Give them where to isolate, etc. So they
Doris, if you don't mind, just let me jump in there. On sick time, if you're a registered nurse in Ontario and let's say you have to take time off because maybe you have been diagnosed with COVID-19, or you have to isolate because you've been close to somebody who has COVID-19, in contact with somebody who has COVID-19. How does that work?
So I will tell you, but when I was talking sick time, I was talking about people with precarious...
Yeah. I can get into that too, but what happens to a nurse?
That's also a concern, that you're opening a genie bottle there.
Well, okay.
So we just heard from members for the last 2 weeks, Rob, that in some organizations, in some hospitals, if you are diagnosed as sick, you get your your 14 days cover. If you are diagnosed that you were not sick and you're self-isolating, they don't cover, or they cover only 85% of it. This is new for me.
Okay.
The last 2 weeks, and we are dealing with that, but that's outrageous, right?
Okay. Every time I hear the news, I'm hearing paid sick day, we need paid sick time, we need paid sick. There already is the paid sick program. Jugmeet Singh, the new Democrat leader, pushed Mr. Trudeau for this.
Yes.
In the minority government federally. It's called the Canada Recovery Sickness Benefit. It gives people $450 after tax for 1 week, right? But you can apply twice. So it's basically 2 weeks of paid sick time. Why is that good enough? Why would Doug Ford need to bring in another program when there's already a program at the federal level?
Because it takes time to apply and to get the money. And if you want people to go and get tested, and if you want people to stay at home meanwhile that they receive results, and you don't have the money of the 2 weeks, then you need that. I mean, remember, Ontario had 5 days of sick time before Premier Ford took them out. So actually, we're saying put that back at least for now for COVID. And in fact, what we are asking is 10 days because the 2 weeks takes a lot of time to kick in.
Okay, I want to get more into why you say too little too late. Why do you say too little too late with a stay-at-home order?
People that followed what RNO was asking from the beginning of this pandemic was precautionary principle. Let's not get to a situation where things are horrific as now they are. We said PPE for the nursing homes. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So every time we are ahead of the curve, but the premier and Dr. Williams, you may remember that we even asked his resignation, are behind the curve. And now we are not just behind. As I said, the train left the station and we are running behind the train to try to get back into the train so we don't crash. That's not the way it should be, right? That's not the way it should be. And now there is a stay at home, but the supports for people that don't have the ability to work from their office at home, that need to go to work, that they may get sick, the supports are not there. People that need to self-isolate and live in multi-generational homes that are small with 10, 12 people, they need to be able to self-isolate so they can help us curb the virus and also they can protect themselves. Evictions, how can you stay at home? So now I understand that this is at cabinet, and I hope the premier will announce it today that we have a full moratorium. Yesterday,
he has indicated that there's going to be a suspension of any residential evictions.
Is different than moratorium. Suspension. Well, we want to know what he means. Suspension is you are going to get a notice. You are going to be hassled. People cannot afford any more stress, Rob. People are stressed.
Yes, it's a very stressful time. Yes.
Put a moratorium as he did on the first wave, because actually, Rob, this wave is much worse than the first. It's much worse.
Well, so I think, Doris, let's listen a little bit to the premier. This was him yesterday. He's talking about the healthcare system, okay? And he's pleading with people. Let's, you know, if you're going to do it for one reason, do it for the healthcare system. Here, this is Premier Ford yesterday.
It's on the brink of collapse. It's on the brink of being overwhelmed. We're at levels we've never seen before. Last week, I stood here and I told you that our province is in crisis, and the facts are clear. Cases and deaths are at the highest levels since the start of the pandemic.
Okay. Do you not think he's sounding urgent enough or serious enough?
Of course he's sounding urgent. Put your money where your words are, Premier. Put the supports to vulnerable populations that cannot do what you're asking them to do. They cannot self-isolate if we do not provide the sick time that they can stay home because they need a check on the table. They cannot self-isolate if we don't have a full stop on moratorium on evictions. You know what I mean? Nice words don't do enough. And also,
you think
the stores are open from 7 a.m. till 8 p.m.
Yes, yes, right. So you think more
is needed on the social support side? A lot more, right? Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Faster is urgent this week. This is why I say to slow, to little, to slow.
There is a...
Everything 2 weeks from now.
Okay. There is a story in the Montreal Gazette this morning about the situation in the Montreal hospitals. I'm sure you remember when we were told we don't want to be like Italy. And in Italy, they were saying, you know, doctors had to pick this person is going to get a ventilator and they might live. But unfortunately, just given the age or the underlying health conditions, we're not going to give a ventilator to this person. They're at that point in Montreal already where they're having to cancel surgeries and cancel all of these things. Do you think we could be headed there in Ontario?
We are heading there. Unless the premier puts the things that all the experts, including Carreño, are advising, not we could, we will. We will. Because the premier will give, including the curfew, just hear what I'm saying, he will put the curfew 2 weeks from now. He will give the supports of 2 sick days, 3 sick days, 4 sick days, where to stay if you need to self-isolate, et cetera, et cetera. 2 weeks from now. We need it today. If not, it's too little, too late, and people will be turned away with ambulances. Yes, they will.
What should be done to improve the situation with long-term care?
With long-term care, we should rush the vaccinations that are left in the fridge. About 40% are still in the fridge.
Okay.
We should do them 24/7. There is an army of primary care nurses and doctors, an army of home care nurses. Those vaccines need to be in the arms of the residents, their essential caregivers, and healthcare workers there. If not, we will see massive deaths again. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it. Okay. We are going to end up, Rob, with more residents in long-term care dying in the second wave than in the first. And the first was horrific enough, so just picture. It's a dire situation.
You know,
it's not enough to only ask the public.
No. And you know what?
On behalf
shame
of
on
colleagues.
Us, right? And shame on us. And shame on us for letting that happen again.
Shame
really.
For us for letting it happen, because from day one, Areneo has been involved with Italy and Spain and all those countries because we work on evidence-based guidelines with them. I have advised the Premier Office since January about what was happening in Italy and in Spain and et cetera, and what was coming here. I advised that the Pfizer vaccine could be a few hours off the fridge because in Israel, and I have family there, they are doing the vaccines without any problem 24/7 and going to the nursing homes, et cetera. So we choose not to hear. It's not that we don't know, Rob. We know what's going on. We are not the first country with this mess. But we are heading to, you know, we were in the middle of the pack. We started in the middle of the pack because we started late. We are heading not just to the middle. We will be in the 70% worse amongst the world.
Okay.
Too little, too late.
I wish you had better news.
Well, I'm sorry. The Premier has a choice today to announce a broad system of support that we have already put the points to him many times for vulnerable populations, because vulnerable populations, not only we need to protect them, they are our key to also protect the spread. You cannot expect that someone that needs to put food in the table will stay home, or all of them will stay home, right, when you don't have the supports to put food in the table.
Okay. All right, Doris, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Doris Greenspun, CEO, Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. Sue Sharing on the way, Ottawa Sun City Hall columnist. She's here every week on the Rob Snow Show. I mentioned with Doris Greenspun, if you read one news story today, I would put it on kind of like your must-read list. Reporter Michelle Lalonde for the Gazette, from the Montreal Gazette, has a heck of a read today. My fear being that this is what awaits us the situation in Montreal, where they have the MUHC. Director of MUHC Critical Care says the situation in Montreal is beyond surreal. I have a minute here or so. As the total number of hospitalizations for COVID-19 neared 1,500 in Quebec on Tuesday, doctors in Montreal intensive care units are preparing logistically and emotionally for the horrific choices they may soon have to make. Quote, I just came out of a meeting about how we are going to operationalize this. Dr. Peter Goldberg, director of critical care at the McGill University Health Center, told the Montreal Gazette Tuesday afternoon, this is something that is surreal, is too polite a term. It's something out of the Twilight Zone that we're even talking about this. This is beyond anything that would have been imagined. They're talking about what happens if the government has to enact its protocol of prioritization for access to intensive care, a rating system that would see some patients refused life-saving ICU treatment to make room for others with a more likelihood of survival. The protocol will be enacted when demand for ICU beds across the province is 200% beyond normal capacity. That is in the Gazette, Life and Death Decisions. 11:48, this is City News.
He's the opinionated Ottawa icon.
The Rob Snow Show returns
on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
This, Justin, Premier Ford's office says the Premier spoke with the Prime Minister today. They had a constructive conversation. It was primarily focused on the rollout of vaccines, but they also touched on, quote, issues of importance to the people of Ontario. Issues of importance to the people of Ontario. One of them might be the stay-at-home order coming into effect at 12:01. Tomorrow morning at the stroke of midnight. Sue Scherring's here, Ottawa Sun columnist. Good morning.
Good morning.
Don't leave the house, Sue.
No, I don't.
Okay. Where are you going to be at midnight? Okay. Don't. Where are you going to be at midnight, Sue?
I will.
You'll be at home.
I'll be at home.
Right, right. And if you lived on the Quebec side, you would have no problem obeying the curfew, I suspect. Right.
No, I'm not doing a lot, Rob. I know that's shocking, but
No. You're doing your part to flatten the curve. That's what you're doing. You're being compliant, Sue.
Well, I wish everyone was.
So, look, in case you missed our conversation last week when Sue was here, Sue is going to be back in the paper with a column covering city issues, city hall issues. And your first column, I believe you said, is on Monday the 25th, right?
I did.
My gosh, you're going to have a lot of material to work with. Have you given some thought into what you might write about for your first column, Sue?
Well, of course, lots of ideas. I haven't,
You haven't actually sat down with the first kind of draft?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. How long does it usually take you to write a column, Sue? Like when you sit down and you said, I'm going to write about this. Does it take a week? Does it take a couple of days? Can you burn one out in an hour kind of thing? Or
this one will probably take me longer because I'm stressed about it. But
Right, okay.
I mean, I used to write, I don't know, 4 or 5 columns a week. So generally it was like in a day. And often I was writing on the day that the news was breaking. So this will be a bit different for me, but really looking forward to it.
Yeah. And you'll write it at home and you'll send it to the paper, right?
Yes.
And do they send it back and say, well, Sue, why don't you work on this or work on this? Or how does that whole thing work, Sue?
No.
No? They kind of give you a free rein kind of thing?
Yes. I mean, certainly if they have questions, if they think I have a hole in the column. But, I mean, no, it doesn't. I mean, keep in mind, I've been doing this, almost since birth, so.
Well, since my birth, anyway, right?
Oh.
Or David's birth, maybe. Nice. Maybe David's birth. David's birth. what do you think about this idea of a stay-at-home order as it's
kind of outlined now by Premier Ford. I mean, we kind of joked that, well, we won't have any problem complying. I wouldn't have any problem complying with an 8 o'clock curfew. I'm usually in bed by then anyway. So,
yes, I mean, as we've talked, I can't really imagine a restriction that I would object to. I am very frustrated that so many of the people I know included are abiding by the rules, because we really would like to be able to go out now and then. And so ending this is, you know, of great necessity. And part of me just feels it almost doesn't matter what they, unless they start ticketing, I don't know that any of this matters much, because people clearly are just breaking the rules. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I think that's going to be a key for this afternoon. Sylvia Jones is going to be part of the news conference at 1 o'clock with Premier Ford and General Hillier, and she's the Solicitor General, so a big part of the Solicitor General's portfolio is law enforcement, public safety, all of those things. What are the police to enforce? And, you know, what's kind of status quo? Because even the police don't know. And if it's one thing that we don't need right now, it's uncertainty as to what police should and shouldn't be doing, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're so right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's things that the city of Ottawa can do in terms of ticketing. I mean, I don't know if you saw Carol Ann Meehan saying she...
Yes, yes. Yeah, I had Carol on. I had Carol Ann on yesterday's show, actually.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, she thinks, look, we've been in this for 10 months. Should we still be warning people? Or is the time for warnings over? You don't think so? The time for warnings is over?
No, it's, I mean, I don't really understand almost with, I mean, sometimes bylaws are created, I think, as an educational tool.
Mm-hmm.
But this is much different. This is like life and death. So if you're going to create, I mean, I think people in Ottawa get accustomed to not being ticketed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You have, in my mind, this is something where you have to ticket people. You have to make it clear that you're going to be fined. You're going to have to pay money out of your pocket. And it's not really a hard thing to do. Wear a mask. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Stay at home.
Stay at home.
Stay at home. Stay 6 feet apart when you do go outside. Only go out for essential purposes. None of this is news, and compliance should not be a great challenge for most people. Right.
We're talking 10 months.
Yeah, 10 months.
You have to know the rules by now. I mean, to me, it's just crazy. I'm resentful. I'm bored out of my mind.
I know.
I'd like to get out.
Yeah, let me ask you one more thing, Sue. Being and covering as a news reporter for the city all this time, on Rabbi Bolkda, maybe just a few words on what a nice community leader he is.
Oh,
and,
my goodness. I'm
sure you're thinking about him. And
absolutely. I mean, yeah. I just can't think of another person in Ottawa where there's so much love for him. He is, I mean, his words, they move everyone. Yeah. I remember the first time I heard him was at a funeral, and he's just so inspiring, and he's hilarious as well.
Yes,
like, when
is,
you get
yes.
a chance to talk to him, as yeah. you and I have, he's just fun. He's fun to be around, but he is such a unifying force in this city, and
yeah, he's going to fight the good fight. Okay, Sue, thank you for this week. Look for Sue Sharing in the Ottawa Sun, back writing a City Hall column for the Ottawa Sun on Monday, the 25th. That's it for the Rob Snow Show. Mark Sutcliffe standing by with Ottawa Today here on City News.
The Rob Snow Show.
Tune in weekdays starting at 9 on Rogers TV and City News, 101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
Number one for local news in Ottawa and the Valley.